Folks, Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, and we are live. Today is episode 3,694, and we are continuing our Meet the Expert Council series with Chris Rossini from the Ron Paul Liberty Report. I'm really happy to have Chris on today. If you notice, he's here already. If you're on the live stream, usually we have some housekeeping and stuff. I got really behind today, so I told Chris we're just going to rock right on into it. So, Chris, man, welcome to the show.
Jack, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
I'm really glad to have you on, man. It's been a big positive for the show since I first started in contact with you a few years ago. We were able to get Ron on my show, me on y'all's show. That was really fun. And I approached you with this idea of doing a segment for our expert council shows. And when I said, I want to bring EC people on, you're like, we could probably get Dr. Paul on for like 10 minutes or whatever. I'm like, bro, you're the guy that actually does this, right? You're the one that prepares the segments every week.
Yeah.
It could be Ron. It could be Dan McAdams. It could be you and Dan. It could be Dan. I mean, just whatever's the best segment of the week for right. what we do, you send us over. So I'm glad we have you, man, because you are the motor that runs the machine that makes the feature happen every week. So I appreciate you for that.
Well, thank you. And it's been great to be friends with you and to get you on the Liberty Report. I'm glad that we made that happen. Yeah, Dr. Paul, he does not do very many hour interviews these days for anybody. So
I don't blame him. I don't either. Yeah, the fact that he's still working at all at his age, man,
that's a testament
to who he is.
Exactly. So I'm happy to be here with you and talk about whatever you want.
Yeah, let's start off with, like, okay, so you're a co-host at the Ron Paul Liberty Report. You're a senior fellow at the Ron Paul Institute. That's all cool and all, but, like, how did you end up in that place? I mean, seldom is a kid sitting in study hall, like, you know, at their senior year of high school and thinking, what am I going to do with my life? And they're like, I know. I'm going to be a senior fellow at a libertarian think tank and a talk show co-host with a former United States congressman and presidential candidate. That's probably not the career path you intended from being a student forward. How did you get into this world?
Yeah, it was two words that sum it up are hard work for sure and a lot of luck. I was a stock market trader for about 10 years on my own. And as I was doing that, I got into politics and I always had a libertarian streak about me. I hate injustice. I hate government tyranny. So in the late 90s, I discovered Ron Paul through the LouRockwell.com and, just was blown away that somebody in government was there like him. And you never heard about him. You had to go on the internet to find about him because, for obvious reasons, you know, he's against government expansion, government tyranny. So for the next 10 years, I just educated myself, Mises Institute, LouRockwell.com. Just as if I was going to medical school, I just buried myself in this. And I got to the point where I'm like, I can't die without speaking. You know, I've now learned. So now I have to speak. And it just was a compulsion with me. And so I started, you know, just commenting on people's blog posts and trying to make myself stick out. And I went to Peter Schiff and offered to work for free, and he let me do his newsletter. And I then worked for another guy, you know, just for free. I just wanted to be in there. And one of the guys that I worked with, Robert Wenzel, we interviewed Daniel McAdams one day. And from that moment, I became friends with Daniel. And, you know, I ended up working for Ron Paul. So that's the short story. Hopefully I hit the major points of it. But, so first it started with massive education and, you know, and then putting it to use.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, I ask almost every guest that comes on the show, that's like my lead question, like, how did you get where you are?
Yeah.
And I would say 90% of the time, it's a split, a 50-50 split, 9 out of 10 people split into somewhere the word Ron Paul comes in. Or somewhere like permaculture, regenerative agriculture, something like that. Something about the food system comes in.
Yeah.
And I would say that, like, again, 90% of our guests, our expert council members, the Genesis story has something to that effect in it. And Dr. Paul has probably created more libertarians and anarchists, I think, than any other human on the planet. And personally, I think it was because he never wavered from what he stated as his convictions. He spent almost 30 years as a congressman.
Yes.
And most congressmen, no matter the game they talk, they always stray from the talk when it comes to the action. The modern day equivalent, I guess, would be Thomas Massie. And for anybody that wants to know what Chris is talking about how Dr. Paul was treated back when he was in government, look at what's being done to Massie today.
Yes.
Right. Just remove Trump's like tirades from the equation and just, but the general way that Massey's treated, that's exactly how Dr. Paul was treated. And I'll be honest, like go way back to like when I was, we were talking before we got on air, like when I was in the military back, this is like early 90s. If I heard the name Ron Paul, I thought loon, right? I didn't know anything. I had no right to think that. That was just how the media always presented him. And, you know, later on, I got involved with the Libertarian Party myself. I actually, I don't know if you noticed, I ran for office back in 2006 for a Texas House seat as a Libertarian.
Oh, I
did. And by then, I had discovered Dr. Paul and was just blown away that, like, there's actually a guy in government that does what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was crazy to me. Like, there's actually a guy that's never taken a taxpayer-paid junket around the world to go and screw off. Like, and so I think that that leaves a lot of people. I think the other side of it is a lot of people that got pulled in by Ron by the time his son was running for president. We got pulled all the way to the other side of like, yeah, I'm out of politics altogether. Like we went all the way to full on anarchist.
Right.
Because I think, and we can get into this, I think one of the things we've learned from the Trump administration is a lot of things people want to do with government, even with a tremendous amount of popular support, are literally not doable. Right. And that's, I think that's the big lesson of DOGE. And, you know, I personally think that maybe the feud between Elon and Trump was to get Elon out of the hole he had dug himself into with hate by the mass. Because it seems like all of that's gone now. We're not burning Teslas anymore. But I can understand why Elon was pissed. Like this dude is worth more money than any other human on the planet. And he spent months sleeping on a floor in government offices.
Yeah.
He finds all this corruption, all this waste. And to be fair, Orange Man did what he could with an executive pen to try to do something about it. And everybody said it was terrible until the moment came to actually do something about it. And then nothing.
Yep.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Like the
it
same
is,
people that railed about it when it came out, when they were offered, like, I'm talking Congress people here. Here's a way you can vote on this. No.
Yep. Yeah. No, they enjoyed taking pictures and saying, look, I got a picture with Elon Musk, but that's as far as they went.
Yeah.
I saw originally, you know, very one of the first ones was Senator Joni Ernst, you know, big time military industrial complex. I'm like, she wants to shrink the government. Let's see what happens if, you know, you want to shrink the militarism. Of course, you know, she wanted to, you know, empty government buildings. That's the
least. Lease out some empty buildings. That was her. And you know what? I'm not opposed to that.
No, of course not. Of course not. Yeah.
That's like you have a guy that has, like, to put it in, you know, terms we can think of, this guy owes $1 million, and his solution to his problem is he's going to stop stopping at Starbucks twice a day and only do it once a day.
Exactly.
You know, and he's going to skip the avocado toast, and that's going to solve his $1 million debt problem. Like, you know, we have somebody here saying the debt will never be paid down. It's simply going to take rebasement. And I've been teaching that forever, but it's mathematically impossible.
Yeah.
It can't be done. The monetary system won't allow the debt to be paid down significantly.
Right.
But at least we could slow the bleed, but it's like, yeah, you know what? Let's just bleed it out. That's just how it seems to be going.
That is, you know, that's always an option. Just let it go down in flames or fight for what is right. And it's a tough one because you're fighting like Elon did. And boy, I'll tell you, when he was campaigning for Trump, the speeches he gave were awesome, you know.
Yeah.
And not to say that he agrees with everything I do, and he doesn't have to. But what he was saying about the monetary system, about the debt, about the wars, about the Fed, and putting Ron Paul to audit the Fed, Fort Knox, the guy was just awesome, you know. And he was just cut off at the knees. It doesn't matter if he's the richest man in the world.
Yeah.
They'll burn his Teslas and they'll make him submit, which is what ended up happening. And none of it is happening. So,
I don't know if he submitted. I think it was more like, you know, effective people realize when I can't do a thing and they're just like, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I think that too.
The Babylon Bee article that they did, the satire of like Elon Musk realized it's easier to colonize Mars than change government. I was like, if there's such a thing as a satire license, they need to lose theirs by now because that's literally factual.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
it is. our government, the people in it, and the people that they have created dependents do not want it to change.
Yeah.
The dependents don't want to stop being dependents, and the people that get all puffed up being senators and representatives don't want to stop their lifestyle.
Yeah.
So Elon was going in and saying, we're going to change things. And they just flat out said, no, you're not. And that's that.
You notice that whenever something comes up like term limits, like Rand every year puts up a proposition for term limits, mm-hmm. even tries to sell them on the existing people with, but not you. Well, grandfather, everybody, this applies once you, and they always vote. Now you have to ask yourself why.
Yeah.
They would vote against something that does not affect them. And my theory is it does affect them because their lobbyists like the consistency.
Yep.
So the lobbyist says, you're not going to do that.
Yep.
Right? Because if I'm a lobbyist, and not really the individual, the firm, like the companies think in decades. They don't think in quarters. And so I'm thinking, well, as these guys start to get voted out and age out and whatever, and we get this new system where, you know, every few years I have a new guy I have to win over, I have to co-opt. Well, that's complicated. I'd much prefer consistency. We see a lot of things in the economy. Like you'd think good news, bad news would move the stock market up or down. Mm-hmm. No, it's change moves it down and consistency moves it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because when
mm-hmm.
it's consistent, it doesn't matter what the rules are. I just don't want them to change because
exactly.
I'm going to game the system. When you change it, I have to change the angle that I come at to game it. And that's going to be a disruption, and I don't like that. So investors start clearing out money because they know that change is coming, and they're looking for the next ride up based on that change.
Yep.
And I think it's the same thing with like lobbyists. I think they just like, I don't even care if I agree with you. If you're my guy that I control, I worked hard on that. I don't want anyone. Like any salesman never wants their purchasing agent at a company that they have a contract with to leave.
Yeah.
Right. And then you get a new purchasing agent. You got to do all the work all over again.
Yep. Now I agree with all of that. They are. And these people that are in office, I guess they don't care. They're basically like prostitutes. And, you know, there's upsides and downsides. They sell their souls, but they live very comfortably. They have people praise them all the time. Oh, Mr. Senator. And,
they
you know,
any news station they want.
Any news. They're very important. You know, when the president signs, they're standing behind watching him sign. So they like it. You know, I'm not that way, so I can't relate to them. But that is how they are, and they like it. And if you point them out, but this is, you know, you're lying here. They're lying, but they're getting away with it, so they're fine with that.
Well, and most people are going to say, and they're right when they say this, but what's your alternative based on your particular politic, right? So, like, there's a lot of criticism for Trump, and we can get into some in just a minute. But what is your, if you're a voter and you think your vote really counts, what was your alternative? Cackles? Right? I mean, like that. Literally, I know we had Chase Oliver from the LP, and that's just an indication that since my days with the LP, it's gone into a just floating dumpster fire.
Yeah.
But let's say he was a legit candidate still. It wasn't. No.
Nah.
It wasn't going to happen. So those are your two choices. It makes me think of the Simpsons episode with the space aliens. What are you going to do? It's a two-party system, right? So that plays out on the micro over and over because let's say you are opposed to what Republicans are doing more than what Democrats are doing, and you're voting in a congressional election in your district, okay? And your congressional district's got Jasmine Crockett, right, as the lead Democrat candidate, and she's the what's on the ticket. And you have her and somebody else, and you're opposed to the Republicans. I don't think you're probably excited to vote for her, but what are you going to do? And I think that's, if you want to sum up our democracy, that's the tagline. But what are you going to do?
No, it's exactly the matrix that we're trapped in. And I even voted for Trump. You know, I thought that this was, and I don't, you know, there's things I do like about him and things that I don't. But and was he better than Kamala? I hope so. I think so. Definitely superficially, you know. Yeah. But sometimes when I read his post, the way he's writing, it sounds like something Kamala would have written.
Yeah.
So he's really a hit or miss. You're flipping a coin. You don't know what you're going to get. But I still prefer him over Kamala.
Yeah. I think he plays the madman card a lot.
Perhaps.
Like,
And
for all of the angst over the Middle East, I mean, I told you, we're not going to war with Iran.
Right.
I told you that multiple times on social media. I even tried to bet you an ounce of silver, gentleman's bet. You didn't want any part of it. Like, we're not going to war with Iran, but I think his, and I'm not saying he's right to do this. I'm saying I think his angle is, but I don't want them to know that.
Right.
I don't want them to know that. And then you send some bombers in, you blow some holes in the ground that may or may not have been effective. I don't know who to believe about the
How can we possibly know?
CNN says it's not true, but CNN says CNN would say water's dry if Trump said it was wet. So, like, we live in this world now, like, you can't actually listen to either side.
Exactly.
Because no matter what the other side says, it must be wrong. I kind of wish Trump would say he's in favor of oxygen, and I wonder how many Antifa people would wrap plastic around their face if he said he was pro-oxygen. But there have been some positives. What are some positives you see out of Orange Man 2.0?
I mean, I hope that they're positives that stick. You know, the executive orders that he was with the Department of Education, with USAID. But, you know, I'm starting to see that some of this stuff is not, you know, they're hiring these people, rehiring them again.
Yeah.
The two big ones, one is the border, assuming all the numbers are correct and we're not being lied to, I think is incredible. The fact that they shut that down, you know, 93% or whatever it is, less people are getting in. I'm assuming that's true. And if it is, then that is a wonderful thing. The other is the woke stuff. There has been a significant change in that.
Yeah.
So those two things, I think are, you know, if he stopped being president at any time, if he accomplished those two things, they're great in my view. So I don't know how you feel about, I'm assuming the woke you're against.
Yeah, I'm totally. Well,
yeah.
My thing with that stuff is I've never had a problem with anybody living their life the way they want to live it.
Yeah.
But I don't expect society to bend around my unique views. And I definitely am not doing it for somebody else. And then the things like men and women's sports, like there's some places that's still going on, but I have to give Trump credit that he's done everything within his scope of power to fight that. And most of the places have said, okay, yeah, we're not going to take that battle up. Places like Maine and California have absolutely fought back with it, you know. But, you know, I also say, like, when people say, but you're supposed to be a libertarian, you're supposed to be for, you know, freedom to do what you want and whatever and individual sovereignty. Okay, yes, but when Harvard says we're going to keep doing this and Trump says then you don't need federal money, that's a different thing. You take the king's coin, you follow the royal edict. That's how that works. If Harvard said we want no government money and no government special treatment whatsoever, we run our thing our way, I'd be the first person to advocate for their right to be stupid.
Right.
But if I'm paying for it and my grandchildren are going to be paying for it and their grandchildren are going to be paying for it, then I have a different opinion on that.
Yeah. I'm the same way with, and I just mentioned the border. Now there's somebody, there's going to be libertarians out there. What are you talking about? Everybody has a right to.
No.
Not in the society we live in. We have a massive welfare state and the government is taking care of them. So that means we are taking care of them. So it can't work that way. You know,
you
I'm all for
open borders. Yeah. Or you can have a welfare state.
Exactly.
You can't have a welfare state and open borders. Those two things can't. They cannot coexist. It's again, we're back to dry water. Like, you know, just add water and it's dehydrated. Now you have water, right? That does not exist. And it's never existed sustainably in history at any time. In 10,000 years of human recorded history, we have never had a welfare state and open borders and a success. Even let's say a 100 year success.
Yeah.
Let alone 1,000, right? I mean, and if somebody says I'm wrong about it, tell me who.
Yeah. I don't know.
You know?
I do know that when my grandparents came here, it was, was it hard? Because there was no – they had to have a job. They had to – where are you going to live? You had to have a sponsor. You didn't just walk in. And it was hard to get in.
Yeah.
So I'm all for people coming here and making great lives. But you can't just open the door and anybody walk in and the government's going to pay for you because that's us. That's not right. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Get rid of the welfare state, and just by doing that, less people will want to come here. But
those that do will contribute. So, like, my grandmother's father on my mom's side came here from Italy at the turn of the century, like maybe 20 years, like 1880. And he raised a family of 11 children in New Jersey as a barber.
Yeah.
Right? Like that. And when some people say, well, we're a nation of immigrants, that's the immigrant. My grandparents on my dad's side were children when they came here from Ukraine.
Yeah.
But all their immigration paperwork says Romania because there wasn't a country called Ukraine then. Right? It was a region. And their language was listed as Romanian, even though they spoke Ukrainian, because at Ellis Island, they're like, yeah, I don't understand what you're saying. Boats from, yeah, you're Romanian. And, you know, they're trying to tell them, no, they're not. And you just go.
Yeah.
Right. And the whole, like, portion of that village settled in this rural little beautiful place in a valley in Pennsylvania where, you know, my family's from on that side now. And, again, that's the people that they're talking about when they say we're a nation of immigrants, people that came here, and they got nothing.
Yes.
They got nothing. That's what they got. They got to come here. That's it. You're welcome. Do something with yourself.
Yeah. My grandfather, same thing, Italian, came, had a third grade education. That's as far as he went. Home in Philadelphia, raised a family his whole life. Third grade education, you know, from Italy. That, you know, somebody today can't even comprehend that. You can't just go to third grade today. You know, but he could, your grand, you know, ancestors could and could live a life today. Even people with college degrees can't make enough money with a husband and wife both working. You know, it's a totally different immigration story than what we're talking about today.
Well, here's a question I have that no one's ever been able to give me a successful answer to. All I've gotten is bullshit political speak when I've asked this. How do we have a young kid that worked his ass off with a 4.5 GPA, however that happens, all honors classes, and a predisposition for something like, you know, physics, try to get into Harvard and be rejected. And then Harvard brings in foreign students on a foreign student visa and gives them a seat in that career path. Okay, that, I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense to me. Not only is it hard to get a job with a degree, but really highly qualified candidates can't get into top schools or even semi-competitive schools when we're bringing people in on student visas and giving them seats, or we're putting people into that position because they're a minority or because of their sexual status or whatever. So to me, that is the complete antithesis of America. That is not what America is supposed to be about. And I would say on the positives of the Trump administration, all of that, I think he's done what he can under the limits of power that the presidency has, and some would say beyond the limits of the presidency, with these courts smacking down a lot of his EOs, and a lot of that I agree with, a lot I don't. I'm like, the whole district judge thing, like a district judge can shut down a president's executive order unilaterally.
Yeah.
And there's hundreds of these people. So I can just, as an opposition person, I can just judge shop until I find one that'll say yes.
You can. Yes. The answer to that is yes. It's a shit, you know, that's,
yeah.
We live in a functioning lawless society is what it is, because everything is just bent to whatever can be gotten away with, you know, throughout all of government. And, you know, if you get away with it, you do it. If you can't, then you can't. So that's, and they'll overturn every rock, look for every precedent, use a law from 1700s. If they could get away with it, they're going to do it. So if one judge can do it and they can get away with it, you know, they have enough propaganda, they have enough of the public, falling for it, then they'll do it, you know, and they know, you know, that very few people get punished for anything. No matter what they do, whether it be wars, whether it be COVID, whether it be, you know, so they know that they can push the limits and nothing's really going to happen to you, no matter who the president is, Democrat, Republican. So, you know, our society functions, but it really is law of the jungle.
Yeah. What is your thoughts now on the actions that we just took, Iran and Israel? And stepping in that with this bombing, like I was completely opposed to it.
Yeah.
But I also said it's like 90% that it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to attempt to be a one and done.
Yeah.
And unless Iran decides to do something like block the strait, there's really not anything else they can do. And that's kind of the way it worked out. So it's like, I didn't want it done, but now that it's done, I look at it and go, I don't know that it really did anything to damage the United States in this.
Yeah.
And it may actually sort of work out better than had we not done it. I don't think so much because of what we destroyed, but when I look at it Machiavellian, like not what Jack Spirko do, but if I look at it from a pure cold politician standpoint,
yeah.
Israel's bombing the shit out of Iran. And we tell Israel, hey, you know, guys, you're kind of going overboard here. No, we have to because they have nuclear weapons. Okay, fine. We send in, we drop a few million dollars worth of ordnance. We wave the flag, we cheer, and then we can turn to Israel and say, you have no reason to do what you say you need to do anymore.
Right.
And that seems like what happened in Trump's response yesterday morning when he said we have two countries that have been fighting so long they don't know what the fuck they're doing. There was a lot of people said that was an act, and I'm like, you know, I watched The Apprentice. He's not a very good actor. That looked like he was full on pissed. Like he thought he had an agreement with both sides.
Yeah.
And then Israel immediately violated that agreement. Yeah. And that looked like genuine pissed off anger to me. And I don't know, maybe that's good because maybe he'll be a little bit less likely to trust anything that comes out of Israel at this point. Because I don't think we can trust anything that comes out of Israel.
No, no. And, a lot of times, Jack, when you comment on my stuff on X, I don't disagree with you. That's why when you ask to have that bet, I'm not going to take that bet because I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah.
My job, though, you know, and just as a person and for Ron Paul, is to defend principles.
The principle. I got
you. Yeah. So you think beyond, and in my mind, I agree with Jack. I think he's going to be right about this. But I am against the principle of him going to war for another country, invasion without Congress. Not that I really trust Congress, but it's at least, you know, something. So, and there is a risk. He could have bombed and it turned out differently. You know, things spiral differently than it's planned. You know, look how World War One started with the assassination of an archduke and Europe committed suicide at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, so it can turn out okay, but it could also, I didn't anticipate that, and now you're off in another direction.
That's also part of sitting in that desk, though. And that's something I also tell people, like, it's really easy to say, well, if I were president, I would, but you have no idea the burden.
Right.
And this is not carrying water for Trump. This is any president.
Yeah.
You don't know what they know.
Exactly.
There's a lot of things they know
that we don't know.
Can't be told as to how we know that this thing is true. There's also a huge propensity for that inner deep state feeding that information up to the top to lie and modify on the way up. And then you're relying on somebody's bullshit detector. And one of my real concerns with Trump is I think he's actually got a decent bullshit detector. But once he trusts somebody, he trusts them fully.
Mm.
And I think that's a lot to do. And I don't know if you know this. I used to be a consultant for one of his companies, right? Where my guy was a direct report to Trump,
right?
That I worked with, and he built his companies that way. You know, matter what you think of the guy, that's how he built his companies. Yeah. Implicit trust within the organization, and I don't think he shed enough of that because he's in a different, very dirty, you know, kind of Julius Caesar knife you in the back the first chance they get world. I think he did learn something from the first term, and he's maybe in a better position, but every bit of hope I had in those early, like, first 90 days has been dashed at this point. They're like, no, he surrounded himself with the same freaking neocon, warmongering shitbags. And I'm sorry, I don't have another word for who these people are.
Right.
People like Lindsey Graham, you know, Vivek had the quip during the primary debates where he said Nikki Haley couldn't name three provinces in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
But she'll send your kid to war there so she can buy a bigger house.
Right. Yeah.
There isn't a person that thinking is more true about than Lindsey Graham, other than maybe, what's his name, Bolton.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think that dude, if the Girl Scouts had an island in the Caribbean, he'd want to invade it. But, like, that is a thing. But I do think that we have to, like, any president, even somebody I really hate, like, I hate even more than... You still don't know what they know, and you still don't know the burden of being tasked with that. Now, on the congressional approval, to do what he did, not had he done something else, but to do what he did, the current law is he does not need congressional approval for that. Neither did Barack Obama or George Bush or Bill Clinton, all whom did very similar things and took very similar actions. Now, we can argue that maybe that limit should be tightened up.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of the guy's name, but one of the Democrat congressmen put up a proposed bill to do just that. And while Hakeem Jeffries was running his mouth about how this violated the Constitution and just making up nonsense, the reporter actually did their job for, you know, rarely it happens, and said, well, what about this proposal that would actually place limits on that? Mm-hmm. I haven't even looked at it. I think you posted that. I think that's why I know about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't. Yeah, I don't read everything that comes out of the. That's Daniel.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Maybe it was Dan.
Yeah. I have a indirect connection to the Trump. My brother-in-law was a superintendent at one of his golf courses, so he would tell me, and this is back before any presidential stuff, how he was. A, in all the meetings, he listened to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wants to hear all the points of view. That's a positive, I think, for Trump. He's very generous. He would hand out money to people, you know, just come in and start handing out $100 bills, you know, and he was very meticulous. He would come into the golf course. I don't like that doorknob. I don't like this on hole five. He takes meticulous.
Yeah.
I think the guy genuinely cares about our country. He's making his decisions. Like you said, I don't think he wants to screw up America.
No.
You know? So I do believe that, even though a lot of the times, like we talk about these neocons and the things he's doing, I hope he has a red line for Israel that he won't cross.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he does. He pulled back now. He didn't go full out war and send our kids to go die in the mountains and deserts of Iran.
Yeah.
So you were right about that. And I, you know, wasn't going to say that he was going to do it. But like I said, he's playing with fire because things can spiral out of control. So I do think
there was other recourse Iran could have had. They could have went, and they still could, start fucking around with some cyber shit. Without support from like Russia or China, their cyber game is limited, but it's not irrelevant. It's not, they're not going to blow up transformers or anything, but they can, you know, do things like hack the billing system of the electric company and essentially shut it down because they can't run without it.
Right.
And then ransomware. My biggest concern with this is there's still potential for someone in the deep state to run a false flag.
Right.
Now, I am not the guy that every time anything happens anywhere, immediate false flag, like Alex Jones crap. Like, that's not me, but I'm not going to say it doesn't happen.
Right.
I spent time in the military. There's literally instruction manuals for how to run false flags that are official military manuals that you can buy a copy of because it's public information.
Right.
Right. So it's not like we don't do this. And if we had something blow up somewhere and hurt a bunch of kids or something, and it was at least perceived to be connected to Iran, you could flip public support on this like that fast. And then would he have the backbone to say, no, we're not doing this?
And I
don't really know.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. And if we're considering this as an option, surely the people that can do these things know that it's an option. But they would have to think that it's something they have to do. I hope to God that never happens, you know. But, you know, we're dealing with very malicious people, and this is out of our control.
Yeah.
But, yeah, would he have the the courage to go against public opinion if it's the right thing to do? This is a false flag. I don't know. Nobody could know that. I don't even know if he could know that.
Anger pretty quick. So if he was pissed and there was not public support holding it back, it wouldn't even be resisting it. It would be like since I want to do this now, like he's the kind of guy that I see, like if you smack him, well, he's probably not going to do anything, but like two of his goons would probably beat the shit out of him even before he was president, and he might let them go until you were bleeding out of your ass, right? Like, I mean, he seems like a decent person, but also a vindictive one when he's been wronged.
Right.
And I do think he cares about America. His patriotism goes way back before his politics. I remember court cases to keep a flag flying.
Yeah.
Long before all of this woke shit. I'm talking back in the 90s. I remember somebody was complaining the flag made too much noise in the wind.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right?
Yeah.
It made too much noise in the wind in their little house that was near the golf course. And he went to spent millions of dollars in court for the right to keep that up. So that's not something you do as a billionaire if you don't really care.
Right.
You know, that's not thinking in 20 years I could run for president. And I just don't see that.
No, I don't see that either. And I hope also, and I mentioned this yesterday, I wrote it, that he wants to stay out of wars. You know, if you're going to improve America, you can't be concentrating on Israel and Iran the whole time.
No.
Or Ukraine.
No.
You're not going to do anything here.
No.
Period. And you only have 3.5 years left. All right.
Yeah.
A half a year is already gone.
Yeah.
And we're going to still end up, you know, oh, well, we had 4 more years of Trump, but it was all about war.
Yeah.
I mean, what a disaster. Don't do that. You know,
I personally think the Mideast thing is going to wind down now. And that maybe, I don't know, as you said, the qualifier maybe had to be done to get it where it's going to go. Ukraine, I have a different opinion on. Ukraine would have been easy. No more money for you. That's it. You're going to negotiate. Not if you don't negotiate, we'll cut you off. I'm cutting you off, and you're going to negotiate.
Exactly.
And this would be over. And people keep saying Russia can stop the war anytime they want. That's technically true. So could Ukraine.
Yeah.
If you just give the other side everything they ask for, the war will end. Well, no shit. We already knew that. And you have people still thinking, like, Russia's going to give up Crimea?
Are you smoking
crack? They're not going to give up an inch of what they took.
No.
You don't surrender when you've won the war.
Yes.
And people cannot accept the fact Putin has won that war. That war is over. It is done. It's just people shooting at each other now over disputed territory that Ukraine is never, ever, ever getting back. They're never getting it back. It's never happening.
No, I agree with you. And we're talking now, you know, it's debatable on whether Iran can even harm us, even if they wanted to. Russia absolutely can harm us.
Oh, Russia can harm us.
Where we are sitting right here at our computers, they can harm us.
Yes.
You don't mess with that.
Yeah.
So, like you said, that's enough, Ukraine. Go come up with your deal. We're out.
Yeah.
You know, and Trump had this opportunity since he got into office and still hasn't done it. You know, they probably kept my own thoughts on this is they kept it as an open wound.
Yeah.
And this Iran and based on what we're reading or I'm reading, Russia didn't really help Iran. They did this all on their own.
He's doing it to just get all the trade deals done with the EU. So that
maybe
maybe he can cut it off because like they immediately are like attacked us as being Nazis and whatever. If we're not going to, you know, keep giving our children's money to Ukrainian bureaucrats to retire on. Like, we're literally funding the retirement accounts of bureaucrats in Ukraine right now.
Yeah.
We're not just sending them weapons. That's, I mean, 100% traceable that's happened with our money. And if we pulled the plug, like Europe says, well, we'll fill the gap, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, they're not.
Yeah.
First of all, because you can give them money, but they also need weapons, and Europe doesn't have the weapons to give them to fight that war. So if you give somebody money, but they can't buy anything with it except more extravagant lifestyles, you're not going to prolong a war that way for very long.
Yep.
So if we cut off the weapons supply, that war is done. And if we don't, it will eventually end because they're literally running. Like, remember what 2.5 years ago? Putin's literally running out of bullets. Yeah, no, that's not how this works.
No,
you don't know any. If anybody believe that, you don't know anything about Russia's manufacturing capacity, right? You just don't. But right now, Ukraine is literally running out of bodies.
Right, which is a sad thing.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. Ugh. For power from the West, you know.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's terrible, and they don't care. They don't care. Yep. 500,000 million, whatever. We have to do this, and you're losing, and you're going to continue to lose.
What I did as an American out of this, right? I guess if I'm investing in BlackRock funds, it might work out eventually.
Yeah,
because this is what's happening, right? I see the war eventually ending. The lines basically staying where they are. Some bullshit about someday it's coming back, and it's not. Right, just like they did with Crimea. And it's also very hard to hold a piece of land when like 90% of the people don't want you there. And that whole Donbass region, those people are Russians and they want to be part of Russia at like a 90 percentile. We can't agree on 90% of anything. Right?
That's right.
So they have that. So they're very difficult to hold. And then what happens is, okay, now we got to rebuild Ukraine.
Yeah.
And everybody that avoided going to the front is a do nothing spoiled rich kid. So they're not going to, like, take construction jobs, mineral extraction jobs, any of that. So what do you do next? Well, we need immigrant labor.
Yeah.
Well, look over here in Europe. Look at all this immigrant labor that they've imported. So it becomes a dumping ground for immigrant labor, and Ukraine will actually lose its sovereignty that way. Yeah. That's my Jack Stradamus prediction on that, that BlackRock will rebuild the country, migrate in a massive amount of immigrant labor, and Ukraine will be unrecognizable as Ukraine in 10 years.
Yeah. Now, Ukraine is like Poland before World War II. Poland was sacrificed.
Yeah.
You know, the British said they were going to, and the French, they'll come to their aid. They didn't lift one finger, and Poland was sacrificed. Ukraine is sacrificed for bigger goals. You know, from these British and French and United States, they ultimately want those resources from Russia. Russia is a sovereign nation. They want to be Russian. They don't want to be woke. They want their culture. They want to be Russian, Orthodox Christian. And that rubs the globalists the wrong way, because that's not their plan. So they've inched their way, they've moved their way ever since the Cold War ended all the way to the border. Russia says, that's it. You're not going this close right on our border, in the same way the United States doesn't want China on our border. You know, so they do not want the United States putting missiles, putting nuclear weapons in Ukraine, and they will fight to the death to prevent it, which they've done. And they prevented it. So it's a stupid war. And it's the saddest part. A, we pay for it, but we only pay with money. The Ukrainians have paid with their lives.
Blood. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I've tried to put this in perspective for people. Like, how do you think we would respond if in Mexico there was like three provinces on the Rio Grande border that were historically part of America, that due to some political thing that happened 25, 30 years ago, became part of Mexico. And then we advocated for those people with the Mexicans. And the Mexicans said, here's the solution. We'll give you some autonomy, and you still are part of Mexico. And we all agreed to that. And then immediately Mexico started a civil war with those provinces. And this was all going on our border of our country. And Mexico was actually China.
Yes.
Right? And you're like, well, we'd never tolerate that. Then why would Putin tolerate? It's the same thing.
It's the same pattern.
It's exactly what happened. Oh, let's make it a little bit worse. Not only that, but a president of Mexico got elected who was well liked by the people in those counties, and it was a duly elected president. And then China came in and overturned the election.
Yeah, which...
And installed their guy that caused those provinces to say, to hell with this, we want out.
Yep.
And then they came to the United States and said, please help us. We're Americans. Please help us. What would we do? Because that's really the full story. If you go back to 2014 with the color revolution, which was Lindsey Graham, right, and A.B. Klobuchar and John McCain... Like, they were all hooked into that with CIA, and they all overturned an election in Ukraine and installed our own, like, U.S. puppet, because we didn't want a Ukrainian president that could get along with Russia.
Exactly.
That's what we did. I wish we did.
It's a perfect analogy, and I'm going to tell you the problem that you and I face. This is thinking that took place here. The mass of people will not ever hear what you just said on television.
No.
And will not think that deeply. They just hear Russia invaded. Let me put my Ukrainian flag in my username, in my profile, and rah-rah.
Yep.
Not thinking, you know, do you even know what you're supporting? And then once everything turns, they start taking the flags down, and then they go to the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, but you're 100% correct. That's the story. And, you know, we just have the disadvantage of most people don't think, and there's really nothing we can do about that.
True. Well, yeah, I got news for y'all. Y'all can put us on your TV if you need that, like, as a emotionally. This really goes back to, like, the United States education system has not been designed to teach critical thinking since Rockefeller interfered with it. And that's been a while. He's been dead for, what, like 70 years?
Yeah.
Right? Like, but that literally, we created an education system designed for industrial workers.
Yep.
Who were specifically the whole system was designed to get rid of critical thinking, because up until that point, that's actually what the U.S. public education did, was teach above all things critical thinking, with the concept of, if you could do that, then you could figure out how to do anything you wanted. You could go on to college to specialize. You could go be a farmer. You could go run a factory. You could do anything if you could critically think.
Yes.
But you would not make a good assembly line worker.
Right.
You'd be terrible for that, because you'd be like, why are we doing it this way? Why don't we do this other thing? Or I don't want to do more. It wouldn't even be like, you might even look like, this is very, very effective. I don't want to do it.
Right.
And you would think your way out of that job into some other occupation, and therefore there was a shortage of labor to do this. And now we're having a complete, I think we're having a complete swap, but some people are having a really, really hard time with it. It's like a virus. A virus really is like a software update, and some people don't survive the software update.
No, you're exactly right. Workers and non-thinking people that will just support whatever foreign policy, whatever they're told, you know, and whatever I have family members
to support, right? Whatever their side says, you know,
I have family members that will not give up Fox News. And they know that they're being lied to. They know that they lied during COVID, that all the wars before, yet I'll talk to them and they're just telling me what the TV is telling them. I don't know what it is. Maybe they don't know that you can get information like this. We're anywhere on X, on NASA.
I'll explain why people watch Fox News. Turn on MSNBC for 5 minutes.
No, I know.
It's the same decision they make in the voting booth.
Exactly.
I know these people are pricks, but they're less pricks than these people.
Yes.
That's all it is. I've said often the only reason Republicans look smart is because they're such a contrast to the stupidity of the Democrats. Like, they look so, and that wasn't always the case.
Yeah.
But today, if you take the positions that are like mainstream Democrat positions today, I understand the manipulation that made you go to the MAGA cult.
Right.
I don't agree with it, but I understand it.
Right.
When you're telling me men can have babies, when you're telling me it makes sense to put tampons in a boy's bathroom, right? When you are upset that we cut off foreign aid that was paying for transsexual operas in Northern Ireland. Right. When these are your positions, I don't know what to say. I'm like, man, I thought COVID jacked up the brains of people. I didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah.
Like, now, PSYOP was the ultimate like knife to the heart of critical thinking.
It really was. It really, really was. And we lived through it. It's amazing, you know, that we could see. That, you know, human nature really, you know, we may have nice technology, but the humans are humans.
Humans can
be tricked as like in the Roman times as much as now, you know, and that just doesn't change. We're human beings and we can be manipulated to the point where you can not only think men could get pregnant, you're going to be a real bastard about it. I hope.
And if you don't agree with me, you're a Nazi.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Men can have babies, lactate and breastfeed.
Yeah.
Right. And they need screening for cervical cancer because a trans woman is a woman. Okay. Yeah. This has nothing to do with the trans rights. Like if we had human rights, we wouldn't have to worry about trans rights.
Yeah.
Right. But this is like so demonstrably stupid.
Yeah.
And for people to actually not only believe it, but to literally say, if you don't say the words, you're an apostate.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it is. It's you're worse than a religious apostate at this point.
Yeah.
You know, you're a blasphemer. You know?
Yeah. It's crazy. That's why, thank goodness, Trump won.
You have a candidate for the Supreme Court in front of the Senate in a confirmation hearing asked what is a woman, and her response is, I'm not a biologist.
True story. Jack's not making it up.
I bet you in 10 years you're going to say that, and somebody that's like 17, 18 at the time that's like a thinking person is going to go, what? No.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're going to go to like whatever form of AI, and there's going to be a video of it happening, and they're going to be like, AI, is this a deep fake? No, this is a vacuum. Like, and they're not even going to believe that it happened.
Yeah.
They're not even going to believe
it. No. And I want to tell them 20 years from now, if you're watching this, beware. It can happen to your generation.
Yes,
beware. Don't think that we're so, you know, because we have, you know, Teslas, that humans cannot go absolutely insane if they're not propagandized to. They absolutely can, no matter what technologies you have.
Yeah. If we have people living on Mars, your roof is producing power for your house. Your Optimus robot is cooking your mushrooms.
Yes.
Right. And your car is doing Uber work by itself when you're not using it. This can still happen.
This can still happen.
In fact, I think it's more likely to happen. The less you're required to think, the less
That's an interesting, and you may be right.
I think we're going to bifurcate into people that take all the, I'm not going to say call it free time, all the opportunity that all of this creates to become expert critical thinkers and people that will abdicate all thinking, period. That's the two classes of people we're going to have going forward.
I think you're right. I think it's great, but I could see the dangers that people can, they could turn it into their own God easily, and that's a danger. And they can sacrifice their own ability to say, and take it as, they'll take what Lindsey Graham says as gospel.
Yeah.
So they will take AI as gospel even easier. And that's,
I don't trust AI, but I trust it more than Lindsey Graham. I think with AI, like, and the way I teach it is you either treat it like a genie or you treat it like an employee.
Yes. It's like, got to serve you.
Companies, and I had one company with 50 employees.
Right.
I had about 6 direct reports in that company. And then within that company, we were managing 2,500 contractors.
Yeah.
I had really smart people that work for me, or they get fired, and they would give me recommendations, and I would always listen to them, like you were talking about Trump. But I would also be like, okay, now that I've heard everybody, we're not doing that.
Right, right.
You have to make the final decision. You have to be the thought leader, and AI is like a thought partner. And if you take that approach, I think it's very powerful. But if you don't, I can see it again, but back to the, ChatGPT said, and what did you do? You asked it a leading question, and it gave you the answer you wanted to hear?
Right, right.
Do you not see that on X now like crazy? At Grok, is this true?
I hate that.
It's so lazy.
And it's just everywhere now.
Yeah.
Make like a separate tab. Here, go. Anybody that asks Grok. Yeah, this is what Grok says, and go over here.
But don't put it into the main conversation.
Exactly. It's terrible, and it's the first one you say, Grok, is this true?
Yeah.
I mean, first off, Grok has incomplete information and always will. It can't tell you absolutely.
Especially when the post is like from a live thing that happened 5 minutes ago. We don't have AI units capable of discerning that yet. And they don't give up. And honestly, for all the crap that GPT got when it came out about being woke, they fixed a lot of it. It is a much better tool now. Grok is the most woke, left-leaning AI unit in existence that I've played with.
Anyway. Get out of here. I don't use it a lot. I use it when I need a specific answer, and it gives, and one that I could, this is legit. But I didn't know it was left-leaning.
Oh, it's so left-leaning.
Wow.
It's crazy. You're asking someone about climate change.
Oh, really?
But right. I also look at AI this way. I know what it's good at, and I know what it's not good at, and just like an employee, if I hired you to be a inside salesperson, I'm not going to ask you to balance our corporate bookkeeping.
Yep.
That's not your role. I'm going to have a bookkeeper do that. And we'll become an AI show if we keep going. But let's talk about something else to do with the Trump administration, the tariffs. Now, as good libertarians, we're both supposed to say tariffs are bad because taxes are bad. Mm-hmm. I do kind of look at it sort of like we were talking about the border. I'm all for open borders, but we can't have a welfare state. Mm-hmm. I'm all opposed to tariffs, but we can't have a country tariffing us at like 100% and we're tariffing them at zero.
Yeah.
Because that does create systemic trade imbalances.
Yeah. I agree with you. I'm not a 100% anti-tariffs. I'm in principle against that, but I understand why they're being used.
Yeah.
You know, and I would prefer to see at the same time or even with tariffs, government shrink, government be less of a burden on society, stop the wars, and the tariffs can be in place and the burden is lessened. We're not seeing that. We're getting burdened and tariffs at the moment.
Yeah.
And I understand why tariffs are in there. I'm not, if they keep them, if we go back to no income tax and you're getting your revenues through tariffs, I am not going to fight that tooth and nail.
But at our current spending levels, it's not even, you can't even discuss that.
Right.
There's if you tariff every single import at 50%, it's 2% of government spending per annual.
Right.
Yeah. The math doesn't math, right? And if anything, that would reduce imports and thereby reduce tariff-based income.
Yeah.
I mean, my policy, if I was king, right, because I said no kings, but I don't want to be president. But king, I could get some shit done, right? So my tariff policy would be as follows. My goal is zero tariffs for everybody.
Right.
And so my policy is my tariff on you is 2 times your highest tariff on us for any single individual line item good. If you tariff one thing at 60%, I tariff everything you have at 120%. Blanket policy, and 2 times 0 is 0,
right,
despite what Terrence Howard says about that. 2 times 0 is 0.
Yeah.
So if you want zero tariff with the United States, put 0 tariff on us, and I'll give you 0 tariff.
Yeah. No, you know, the goal should be 0 tariffs all around,
yeah,
but, you know, we don't live in that world.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there's dangers to tariffs because
yeah,
now, you know, these companies here can now be fat and happy, and now this becomes their crutch.
Yeah.
And they can get lazy and their service can go down, and, you know, we got tariffs with the, we don't have to worry about competition.
Well, the other thing that happens is you can move a whole bunch of industry into the United States.
Yeah.
And the next, you know, Cackles shows up,
right,
and reinstates the imbalance in the opposite direction and raises corporate taxes, and then all those companies flee again. And
yeah. Yeah,
this is part of why I think this is above all the things other than not shooting at other people,
yeah,
and other countries and starting wars. Above all things, this trade issue needs serious pragmatic consideration, which it's not going to get. Because I've seen the results of what's happened over the last 70 years with this exact policy that got us there, which is letting these imbalances occur. I don't know how much driving you've done across this country, but I've been to town after town after town where you get into this town and you look at, like, you go, it's a blue collar town. It looks like something was here and now it's gutted.
Mm.
And if you drive around enough, you'll generally find some big area full of warehouses and they're rusted. And there's trees growing through the parking lot. And then you talk to the people that live there, and they'll almost talk about it like it happened 2 years ago.
Mm.
And then when you start drilling down, well, when did this happen? You're talking to an old man that was there for it, or a kid, you know, which is 40 years old now, whose dad was there for it. And it's the same story every time. It was a great place to live. There was a lot of jobs. People had jobs here. They had one income families. And it was in the 70s.
Yep.
And from the 70s forward, it was slowly gutted and everything got outsourced and that whole town fell apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not saying a couple towns like this. I've seen dozens of these towns. I'm literally, when we travel, I look for them.
Yeah.
I'll pick something on a map. I'll look at the way the roads flow in and out. That looks like a hub. Let's stop there.
Yeah.
And almost every time, just by looking at the structure of the town, and if I don't know its name and it has the right structure, you're going to find a gutted town.
Yeah.
And again, this can all happen again because now we're doing all the white collar work and all.
Yeah,
that can exactly all be wiped out too. I'm sorry.
And that's part of the reason why. First off, that's very interesting that you do that. But that's part of the reason why I'm not an anti-tariff absolutist. You know, I understand why, and the reason that this happened to our nation was purposeful.
Yeah.
This wasn't accidental. Oh, this is just the way life goes. You know, no more horse and buggy. Now we have cars. No, this was purposefully done to our nation to gut us, you know. So if tariffs help to bring some, you know, blood flow back to our nation, I'm not going to be against it. But again, there has to be another side to it. Shrink our frigging government.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not doing that. So,
no.
So that's, you know. Hopefully someday.
I think the other side of this is, for all the no king shit, presidents aren't kings.
Right.
But tariffing is a king-like power of the presidency in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of things that a president can just do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to say that you have a 40% tariff, and there it is.
Right.
And so I think Trump, being a negotiator, is using it as a club. I don't think he actually wants the tariff.
Yeah.
He wants the other side to make a deal. And he's like, do you want to make a deal? No. Well, okay. Up your ass.
Right.
And so far that has been, with the exception of China, quite effective.
Right.
And somewhat with China, but pretty much everybody is making the deal. It definitely seems that way. And it seems like, I think my sources tell me there's a stack of deals, but Trump wants the big, beautiful bill.
Yeah.
And those deals are all basically sitting on a shelf until Congress gets on with that deal. That's what I've heard.
Well, that would be good. You know, that would be good.
I don't know if it's good or bad, but that's the outcome that I'm expecting at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's using it as a tool, you know.
Do you think with this big, beautiful bill, is that Trump pragmatism or is that just Trump co-op? Like, so, you know, there's a very famous statement, politics is the art of the possible. So if I want all these things and I need these people to get them done, then I have to give them other things or I can't do the things that I said I was going to do.
Yeah. It's tough because we can't get in this guy's mind.
Yeah.
We're assuming, like you said, that there's these deals waiting here, but
yeah,
we can't get in guy's mind. So we have to go by, well, what's this going to do? What are they trying to do without knowing the nuances?
Yeah.
And being libertarians, we can't just sit back, or at least I can't.
Yeah.
And just take it. So I will, you know, point back at the raising of the debt, raising of the deficit. This is nothing like what we were expecting, and point out that part.
Yeah.
But what you're saying may be true. It may be pragmatic. I can't do anything.
Maybe that's why I'm less disappointed than you, because I never expected the debt or deficit to go down.
Yeah.
I never expected it to happen. And I didn't think it was because anybody was lying. I thought so because I do math.
Right.
Right. I could do math. And math says, I've said probably 4 years ago, if in the next election, by some miracle, we got a Congress full of Ron Pauls, a right. Senate full of Ron Pauls, and a president in the Ron Paul mode, you still, like, you could mitigate this. Mm-hmm. You still can't prevent it. Like, the things that have been done in the past have already wired the system to be financially unsustainable. Like, if I came to you and I'm like, if I'm 27 years old and I'm 50 pounds overweight and you're a personal trainer and I have some bad habits and I say, I want to clean up my health, you're like, let's get to work.
Yeah.
If I come to you and I'm 80 and I have three different cancers and I weigh 600 pounds and I have type 75 diabetes and I tell you the same thing, you're like, bro, you're going to die.
Yeah.
Like,
enjoy what you can.
That's our fiscal reality in this country right now without some kind of rebasement. And that's a big part of my recommendations for Bitcoin.
Yep.
That's why I think the Genius Act with stablecoins was a good move. And that's a thing now. And that's going to happen. And the banks will do it. The banks will start issuing stables. They will buy a piss load of U.S. debt because they have to back the stablecoin with U.S. That's the only real immediately liquid, deep enough pool to do it with. That's going to reduce the need to sell U.S. debt because there's already buyers for it. That's going to push interest rates down, and we get another can kick. It doesn't fix the problem.
Right.
It kicks the can, and politicians will always kick the freaking can if they can.
Now, how does that, if you don't mind me asking you a question, how does that affect us inflation-wise?
So the what it does inflation-wise, by making the banks issuers of stables, basically a tether issued by a bank, which would mean full U.S. bank and government backing with a one-to-one exchange that's audited and known, then everybody in the world and all these little podunk countries, because you think the dollar sucks, but you're not using lira.
Right.
Right. You're not using pesos. Right. Now I got U.S. dollars on my phone. And I've gotten a form that's almost completely unpreventable by a government from me using it. Right. It's software. True. Good luck stopping it. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I can do business in dollars. Now what we do is we further diffuse dollars out in the world.
So we're exporting the inflation. We're
exporting dollars without exporting them. Because we're exporting a synthetic dollar, but we're holding the dollar in reserve in the country. So what it does is diffuses inflation. It mitigates inflation temporarily. Unless all those dollars start flying back in. But I think the long-term plan is, and this is more like, I'm careful with this one because there's me being hopeful, that you actually move the United States over to a reserve currency based on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
If you do that, there's an opportunity right now to guarantee its success.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, Michael Saylor said it, whatever country prints their own money to buy Bitcoin with first wins.
Hmm.
If you start buying something, there's only 21 million of, and you're doing it with federal printing presses.
Yeah.
You can buy as much as the market's willing to part with. And once you lock up enough of it, there's only one place for it to go. And that's up due to scarcity. That's enforced by a network that won't give up that scarcity. right? So I think that's the long-term plan. I think that's what all these crypto bros that he brought in, like Vicente and all, are angling for. But again, can they actually do it?
Right.
Or do you snooker it? Do you get it in place? And I do think once the BBB is done, win or lose or draw, that's when you start seeing actual money go into the strategic reserve. And if it gets big enough, right, if it gets big enough in value, then it becomes a can for some future politician to kick. Because it's there. It's already there. And yeah. I know it's not going to go down in value because once we do this, we don't sell it. And therefore, we're locking up such a huge piece of this that, and then other nations have to do it. Like, I've done the math too. Like, there's not room for three more MicroStrategies.
Right.
This is not enough. Like, right. The only option then is parabolic upside.
Right.
So
right.
I think that's the game, but I'm not betting on that. I bet on Bitcoin for other market centric reasons, but I think right. that's the plan, and it may be the overriding plan of people that are even saying it's not right now. People that say they're opposed to it, you know, yeah. Not Liz Warren, but you know, lesser opposition.
Now, well, I want to take this moment to thank you because you got me. You taught me with your podcasts about Bitcoin, and I got in a while ago. And
yeah.
You know, so thank you for that. And I've been sold ever since. I'm always get leery, and you mentioned it before when Ted Cruz and all these villains start talking about Bitcoin. I'm like, what do they know something I don't know?
But Bitcoin is for enemies. Right. Bitcoin is for everybody. That means it's for enemies, right?
Like, yeah.
If you look at it as money,
which I do,
right?
Which
if
I
you treat look it at as. It as money, then anybody else being involved with it doesn't bother you anymore,
right?
Because of course they're involved with money,
right?
Because everybody like what's more viral than money?
Yeah.
There isn't anything more viral than money. Like, if you want to spread something, attach money to it. It'll spread, you know?
Now, do you have a stable coin that you recommend that people buy? I mean, it's one-to-one. So yeah. Is that another way to just have digital dollars instead of the only, bank?
The only utility I would use it for, and I think this is going to be the utility that it gets used mostly for, is as a form of capital based on leverage. So I think right. the future is people taking their Bitcoin,
yeah.
following the billionaire model of buy real estate and never sell it and borrow against it.
Right.
And then use the borrowed money to pay back the loan money and then recycle and keep doing it. And the form of that loan will be in bank issued stables.
Right.
So I don't really hold any, why would I hold a stable coin? I guess is my thing right now. Like, I have no benefit to do that.
Right.
If I was doing business with somebody that payments were enabled by stables, I would use them. And in a roundabout way, many people, including myself, are using stables right now. If you use a service like Strike,
right?
So Strike is a Bitcoin exchange, but they don't operate like an exchange. So they're not regulated as one because they have one thing they do. And you can't like sell your Bitcoin for dollars with them. In a roundabout way, you can, but you can't. So in Strike, I can send you money. And if all I have in my Strike is Bitcoin, I'm going to send you money across the Lightning Network, and I'm going to send you dollars.
Right.
Not Tether's Bitcoin. How that happens.
Tether, yeah.
Tether is the back end of how that happens. Or if I'm smart, I don't want to spend my Bitcoin. And let's say I'm using Strike kind of like my payment system, my bank, and I'm moving surplus capital into Bitcoin and I'm pulling it into self-custody as it reaches certain volumes. And then I have Bitcoin in there, or I have dollars in there, and you say you want to sell me something. I say, Chris, I'll buy it from you. And you go, but I only take Bitcoin, or I'll give you a 5% discount for Bitcoin.
Right.
Well, I can send you my dollars.
Right.
And they'll convert on the flow in like an atomic swap, and you'll get Bitcoin.
Wow.
And that's the about the only way I use stable coins right now is in that format, because I don't want to sell my Bitcoin, and I don't want to sell my Bitcoin because it's a freaking accounting nightmare.
Right.
Right. How much did I pay for it? What's my basis? And if you have 1,000 transactions a year like that.
No,
just and people say, well, like, why don't people spend their Bitcoin? Why don't companies really take it or whatever? And that's why, because every piece of accounting software in the world is built on a dollar denomination.
Right.
Right. Even if you're doing euros, like, it's still based on the dollar and it's doing a conversion on the back end, right? Like, everything that's ever been written as accounting software in the world, because it's a reserve currency, is on the dollar. Mm-hmm. So it's not the accounting systems are not set up for this. So, you know, if they do the Loomis thing with the de minimis purchases, 600 and less, that may open some of it. But in the end, I think it's cultists that want, like, they insist that you spend your Bitcoin. Bitch, don't worry about what I do with my Bitcoin. You worry about what you do. That's how I feel about that. Like, I have the hardest asset in the world. Why would I part with it? And when I spend it, I'm selling it. So if you're going to tell me not to sell it and then tell me to spend it, you have a conflict of logic going on there.
I have the same philosophy. I haven't sold one sat. So it's, I'm the same way, especially because I don't want to deal with taxes and this and that and when you buy it and when you sell it.
Yeah.
So maybe someday if they get rid of that and it's actual treated like money and you're not paying taxes on every transaction.
That would be the number one thing that they could do.
And,
and they'll have to at some point if the plan plays out, right? Right now it's a commodity is how it's looked at. So it's like buying and selling a stock. It's the same thing without the wash rule, which is actually important. So that I want to get back to some political stuff, but like one of the coolest things about Bitcoin is if you manage it so that you know what you bought when you bought it and you have individual blocks, if you are nearing the end of a tax year, and let's say you can say I lost $10,000 on this by selling it, you can sell it, immediately buy it back, and lock in the loss. Now you lock in a new basis, and if you ever sell it in the future, then that basis is going to make you more profitable. But you can take the loss. If you can't do that with a stock, it's called the wash rule. You have to wait a certain amount of time before you buy it back. So anyway, what are your thoughts on some of his cabinet picks, on Trump's cabinet picks?
I didn't like the neocons, but again, I don't know what his thinking is. Does he think I want to see what these nut jobs want to do? And that way I know I'm keeping it close to me, so then I understand it. Now, even though, that's what he's doing. Tulsi Gabbard, I'm, based on my understanding, I'm disappointed in what, even though I know it's funny with the wording, like, you know, I'm very anti-war. I really hate war with a passion, probably because of my my family history with war.
Yeah.
So anything that keeps us out of war, I'm very passionate about. So anybody that advocates it, and they advocate it with not a shred of human decency in Washington, I'm I'm going to attack that.
Yeah.
Verbally. So, and he's got a lot of those people.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. So,
yeah.
And Tulsi was always kind of the anti-war candidate until she had the job.
Right.
Yeah. I think Cash, Patel, and Pam Bondi are like two of my biggest. I don't know if they're disappointed. More like, see, I told you with the whole Epstein list, right? Like this Epstein list thing, I just find this to be like a complete idiotic term. There is no Epstein list, right? When they say the Epstein list, the Epstein files, that would be, let's say that somebody unalived by neighbor, somebody broke in the middle of the night with a hammer and knocked a hole in the head of my neighbor.
Right.
The sheriff's department is going to come out and conduct an investigation. It's not going to be freaking, you know, federal because it's in-state one-off thing. They're going to come over here and say, Mr. Spirko, can we talk to you and your wife? We're going to say, absolutely, you can talk to us. And they said, you know, we don't know anything. We didn't hear anything. We didn't see anything, whatever. Or we're going to say, oh, we saw a car over there, whatever. And they're going to write down that they interviewed us. We're now in the files. Yeah, so if people say something like Trump is in the files, well, we've known that.
Right.
It doesn't mean he was boinking teenage girls. Now, maybe he was. I don't know.
Right.
But that's not what that means. That means he was investigated as a known associate of Epstein at some point. And from what we know, now whether it's true or not, he was like the person that most cooperated in that investigation out of everybody they interviewed that was anybody of notoriety anyway. And I feel like if they had something on him for real – with all the bullshit they made up to create 36 felonies out of a bookkeeper, like they would have went for that too. So I don't feel like there's anything there, but he would be in the files. And so would any single person that the FBI interviewed in conjunction with that interview. And this is going to sound weird. I'm actually going to sound like I'm defending Cash and Bonnie for a minute. If you just dump that list, it's a very slanderous thing to associate somebody by name with the files. The files would be, where's all the videos of people doing this?
That's
exactly. You know the guy had all this equipment. I'll tell you where I think it is. It's in freaking Tel Aviv. in a black site under Mossad's control. That's what I think it is.
All right, yeah.
And I think Bondi and Cash have nothing to actually release. And even if they meant it when they said it, now they're like, oh.
Yeah.
What? There's nothing? Like, you know, I made a meme and it was the kid with the spoon for the Matrix, right? Yeah. To ask where the Epstein files is impossible. You need to realize there are no files. Like, they'll never. I will say that Trump will be retired and probably long dead, and you still will not see these mystical files.
No. And this goes back to also what we're asking them to do.
Yeah.
It goes back to even what we're talking about, how them with the both sides. These people in Washington, Democrat or Republican, protect themselves.
Yeah.
All of themselves.
Yeah.
Even their enemies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so but Cash and Bondi could go after stuff that was done to Trump with the Democrats. You know, they could do that. You know, I understand the Epstein.
And they're like, we're going to investigate Biden in the auto Pentagon. They're not going to do that either.
They're not doing anything.
Look at the pretty woman while I pull a rabbit out of the cage. Right. Like that's what this is.
Yeah. So I would be shocked. I mean, they do nothing with COVID. They do nothing with Epstein. Those things, I understand. You're all criminals. You're not going to punish yourselves. But you could go after the smaller fruit or the smaller do something.
No, so I look at the FBI and the Department of Justice. They're the United States government's HR department.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what they are. Like, so when you work for a big company, HR does not exist to protect you.
Right.
HR exists
to protect the
company.
Yes.
The Department of Justice and the FBI and federal law enforcement do not exist to protect the people of this country. They exist to protect the government.
Yes.
They are the Praetorian Guard of the United States federal government.
Yes. And the media is not there to inform you.
Yep.
They're there to be the megaphone for the government.
Yep.
It's the same thing. At the same time, do something.
Yeah.
You know, at least give,
they do, right? That's what I was going to say. Like, so somebody will say, they broke up this thing and they arrested all these child traffickers and whatever. And I'm sure the Praetorian Guard did some good things too.
Right. Right.
But what was their prime charge?
Right.
Protect the empire. Protect the emperor. Right. That's what I think we've got. And I mean, I know people that have worked inside some of these task force. I have a relative who is a sheriff in Colorado, but he's now on his third attachment to a federal task force. And he worked in the first Trump administration on a task force for child trafficking and human trafficking.
Mm.
And he said it's awful. He said the hardest part is, when you do all the work and you finally find the people and you rescue them, they do not want to talk.
Wow.
They are terrified. And no matter how much you tell them, we'll protect you, whatever, what they've been through, and it ends up almost impossible to get convictions.
Wow.
And the best thing you can do is basically disrupt and destroy and dismantle. But for every time they do that, you know, 10 times they do that, they get maybe one or two actual convictions.
That's incredible.
And when they do get a conviction, it's always that the person that they caught was low or mid-level and stupid.
Yeah.
And he's like, if that person, when we caught them, had just shut up,
yeah,
they would have got away with it. But they started talking, and we were able to get charges on them because they ran their mouth. If they had just said, I want a lawyer and shut up, and then you've got the person they victimized sitting there going, we would never get them. Yeah. So it's not easy, but yeah, do something.
Or even just the political, what they did to Trump with the 94 convictions and all.
Yeah.
I mean, these were done by people in the government. You can go after them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, the thing with the New York convictions, that was beyond disgraceful.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that they were able to get convictions in that didn't surprise me, but I felt guilty that it didn't surprise me. I felt like I knew this would happen. It's New York City.
Yeah,
they judge shopped. They jury shopped. But it was such a twisted, convoluted thing. We have a misdemeanor with an expired statute of limitations. We're going to link it to a federal election law and prosecute it at the state level and turn bookkeeping into 36 individual felonies and get a unanimous conviction out of a jury of 12.
Hmm.
If you just told somebody that was going to happen and you didn't use the word Trump.
Yeah, never.
They would say, this is the most – like, this guy needs – like, wherever this guy's from, send him back to the Looney Tune ward, put some lithium in. I'm like, there's something wrong with this guy. It's that bizarre. But they did it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that just shows people that are determined for power will turn every button, press every knob that they have to.
Where do you think we go from here economically?
I guess that depends. It depends on so many things. I don't know what to say. It depends on war.
Yeah.
As we're having this conversation, I don't know if the whole Iran-Israel thing just flipped on us.
Blew up again.
Yeah. Because I'm talking to you. I don't know. Yeah. That's always possible.
Yeah. You
know? So, but again, I know.
Let's assume Iran and Israel put their shit. War in Ukraine comes to some sort of at least they're not killing each other by the end of the year.
I think without war, the bill passes. Yeah.
What does next year look like economically?
That's hard to say, too, because a lot of times, even if you're improving, it doesn't look so good.
Yeah.
So, I have more confidence in Trump. I think he has his own theories, and if he puts them into place, he's the leader. You know, if he gets trade deals and gets better deals with other countries, I think we can, over time, do better. A year is very short, and that's part of the problem with having a presidency is even in 3.5 years is what he has left. It's not that much time.
Full knowledge, he's not going to be back.
Exactly. I mean, we can't.
That rhetoric's finally stopped. He'll never leave office.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's amazing like how much rhetoric's dropped from the left. Elon bought the presidency. He's the real president. Right? That just all went away.
Yeah, I never believed that.
No, of course not. But they literally ran with that.
Yeah.
But
I wish.
You got a lame duck from day one in administration.
Yeah.
Which I think is why he hit the ground running so hard. The first 90 days of his presidency were mostly positive.
Yeah.
At least in sound, if not in action.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, I know I only got so much time to get things done. And he did seem like he looked like a second term president.
Yeah.
Even though there was a break in the middle, like he didn't look like he was starting from zero at all.
Yeah.
And that was impressive. My personal belief is I think the next 5 years are going to be unprecedented growth in this country.
Yeah. I hope you're right.
That doesn't mean that the debt problem is going to go away at all. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But growth and middle-class incomes, I think will blow up, but I think it's temporary and transitional. And notice I didn't say transitory. I said transitional because I think it's a permanent alteration of the entire economy and technology forever.
Right.
And so I don't know how long you've been listening to me, but I mean, I was saying back in like 2010, 2011, the decade from 2020 to 2030 will be the largest decade of flux any living human being has ever seen.
Right.
Yeah. So I was saying that 15, 16 years ago, I was saying that. And I think that's playing out. I did not foresee the absolute lunacy of COVID being a part of the catalyst for it. But I said there would be something. I never thought it would be that. That was
right.
The most bizarre period of time I've seen in my life. I'm not going to say the most devastating or anything. It's just the most bizarre. Like to see doctors told to shut up by news people. To see people shouted down for having a different scientific opinion.
Oh, that was bad.
On things that were demonstrably true, by the way.
Yeah, bad.
To watch the end come and then the literal response be, you guys were right, but for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
This is the most bizarre thing to have a doctor say, well, the way I treated it was I had a patient who couldn't breathe. So I asked myself, what do I do when I have a patient that can't breathe? And I give them corticosteroids, and then they can breathe.
Yeah.
And then have that doctor threatened with having his medical license taken away.
We've lived through some stuff, I'm telling you. We haven't, thank God, and I hope we never do, live through what my grandparents lived through, bombs dropping on their heads.
Yeah.
But we have lived through some stuff between COVID, between the trans stuff, between our politics are insane. I hope you're right about the next 5 years. And I hope President Trump can do that. But I don't want to hear that Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and everybody else is going to get rich. We need America to grow. You know, I don't want to see numbers that, we're going to have $1 trillion military budget.
Yeah.
You know, we need productivity, not dropping bombs.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff that has gone in, it's not going to ever be all. But to rebuild what you talk about when you travel the country, we can have more freedom. And unshackle people's minds. Let them be creative. You know, I know you're all about that too.
Yeah. Let people create. I think you're going to have a complete educational, that's already having a complete educational transformation. Like, again, back to AI, I can, you tell me what you want to learn and I give me 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I will create a customized individual learning track for you that will do more than any school could do. And I'll accelerate your learning from 4 years to 3 months. And it's not because I'm smart. It's just because I learned how to use a tool to do that. Right. Like I'm building custom elective learning blocks for my grandchildren for homeschool now.
That's wonderful.
Right. And you don't have to be a programmer or a genius to do this.
Yep.
You just have to figure out what the interest of the student is and then figure out the right prompts to get what you're looking for.
Right.
And so we have that. And that's something like, I think this boom will be very similar to the internet boom, not the dot-com boom. The dot-com boom was a blip.
It was BS.
It was a blip. And it was a bunch of companies printing stock to buy shit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But the internet boom actually never had a bust, and it never stopped.
Right.
Right? The internet boom was from the time people start getting disks. You've got mail.
Yeah.
All the way up till today. And there are thousands more. There's millions more entrepreneurs just in the United States than there were before the internet that are actively earning a living right now. And two of us are talking to each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So if anybody downside, like before that, what was our alternative to what we do today, Chris, in 1995?
We'd have to write letters or go on the phone.
No, I'm talking about to be a broadcaster, to do what we do.
We couldn't.
Yeah. Well, you could go to school. Get a degree in broadcasting, right?
Oh, that, yeah.
Schlep coffee at an AM radio station for a few years. Maybe get a spot at 2 o'clock in the morning on the air. And if you were lucky, maybe you got your own spot. And then if you're really lucky, you could get syndicated, right?
Yeah.
Where today, you want a podcast, a few $100, and I'm not saying you're going to succeed, but you could take the shot.
Yeah.
Right. I've made a living doing this for 17 years now on my own.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a path before the internet. AI is going to open up 1,000 paths that we don't even see yet because people are, in the words of Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, people are stupid, but a person is smart, right? Perfect. That's what Tommy Lee said to Will. Like Will's like, but people are smart. No. People are stupid.
Right.
A person is smart. And when you give a person a tool,
yes,
they just might do something with it. So I think we're going to see this incredible, like, even if they try to prevent it, there's no way to do it now.
No.
I'm not saying that doesn't mean everything's going to be great, because when you have flux, some people get destroyed.
Yeah.
Some people got destroyed. Like, if you go back, let's go back before even the internet. Let's go back to before photocopiers existed and basic word processing. There were tens of thousands of women employed in typing pools. If you were a woman and you could type and you wanted a job, you could pretty much get a job back in the 60s, right? You just go get a job. And then when we started having the ability to make reproduction, and then once it became a keyboard instead of a typewriter, that all disappeared.
Yep.
So some of those people never recovered from it. But there were more jobs created when it went away than were lost when it went away. And that's what we're looking at with tech flux, technological flux right now.
No, I love tech, always have.
Yeah.
You know, and if it could serve me in a like this is, then my goodness, that's the whole purpose. And we're talking about this. You could talk about anything, you know? And nobody, you were talking about 1995.
Yeah.
Those were controlled mediums. You can't just say what you want on ABC, NBC.
No, you still can't.
Yeah, you still can't.
I get fined daily.
Yeah.
Right?
But we can say whatever we want.
I would be fired and fined on day one and never have another day two. I mean, that's what would happen to me, you know? And it wouldn't even be over controversial things. I drop one too many F-bombs and that would be the end of it.
No, right? That's, you know? And we live in a society where if a person's like, I don't like that this guy drops F-bombs and they doesn't, but another one says, I do like him. And I will.
Don't listen if you don't like me.
Yeah.
Right? That's been my philosophy even when I was fat. If you don't like the way I look, don't look at me.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and that's the genius of, you know, freedom, you know, and letting entrepreneurial creativity flourish, you know, and the internet is a big wrecking ball to the Rockefeller, to the TV, to our empire. It's a wrecking ball, and as long as it survives and is used like a wrecking ball. So, yeah. You know, and we're using it as a wrecking ball, you and I. So yeah. That's good.
So what's up next for the Lurie Report? I know Dr. Paul's probably got to be getting somewhere near retirement.
He's one of those that he's going to go until he can't go anymore. He's going to be 90 this year.
Wow.
And he loves it, you know. So we're going to go as long as the boss wants to go. And hopefully afterwards, Daniel and I can keep it going.
Yeah.
So.
And how can people get the most from you guys? Because you're a little different than the rest of my expert panel. Like, they're not sending you questions or something like that. But you guys have a show that you do multiple times a week, and you have a lot of other collateral you put out. So how can they get in touch with you guys and find out more about that and benefit from it?
Yeah, well, the Ron Paul Liberty Report is every day. We're on all the major podcasts and Rumble and YouTube. So if you'd like to watch that, we do it live. But if you don't want to watch it live, it's on there. And we could be contacted if you want to be a donor, which would be great because that pays my paycheck, is the RonPaulInstitute.org. But check us out. Make sure you like our work. We are 100% funded by regular people. We have even though he's Ron Paul just like he was in Congress.
Yeah.
Just the people support us. I'm on X and I'm on Noster. Jack got me onto Noster, which has been great. That's been growing.
Yeah.
And I hope more people, because we never know what's going to happen with X. You know, someday Elon may have the screws turned on him, or he may feel like turning the screws and that's it. Yep. Whereas on Noster, we can be sure that's going to remain untouched. So
in a weird way, I think Elon was the worst thing that ever happened in Noster. It was going gangbusters right up until he stepped in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but at the same time, he has done good.
Don't get me wrong, but
yeah.
The migration was in full effect, and what it reminded me is we have these huge gun shows down here. I know in New Jersey you guys don't have that, but we have I can't think of the name of the place now, but it is a building down in Fort Worth, a complex, and it's like 5 acres under roof.
Yeah.
And it's tables of guns for 5 acres.
Yeah, no, that's not New Jersey.
But you go into one of these, and it's like when Obama was president, you went to a gun show. It was like a freaking party.
Really?
It was like as big as it was. Like you were like moving sideways, like you're at an amusement park through the tables, and like everybody, there's just noise. And you know when you walk in a place and there's energy.
Yeah,
you can physically feel the energy. It was like that. Trump got elected in 2016. He hadn't even sworn in yet. My buddy, they always have one between Christmas and New Year's.
Yep.
And so my buddy Dave and I, we go to this gun show, and we walk in and you feel like you walk into a courtroom in the middle of a divorce proceeding or something. Like the energy is just through the floor. Mm. There's like 10% of the normal people milling about, and there was no urgency or anything. Cause like the threat that somebody's going to ban your guns was gone.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah.
And I feel like when Elon bought, Twitter and eventually turned it into X, that urgency to find another platform just fell off. And so the growth is there, but it isn't what it was. The enthusiasm isn't there. And then freaking Facebook, Meta, whatever the hell it is, Zuckerberg's bullshit, basically pulled back a lot of their crap too, because once Elon did what he did.
Yeah. It kind of pressures them.
Right. And the other thing that died was, remember Parler?
I do.
It's just gone. I mean, I guess it's still there, but I think Truth Social ate that, what was left of it. Cause the coordinated attack on that was pretty malicious. Like, that should have been antitrust lawsuit out the ass, and somehow that never happened. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah,
as long as Noster survives.
Will Rogers, that's the place I was trying to think of, the Will Rogers Center.
Yeah.
5 acres of guns, Chris. You got to come down to Texas sometime, man.
I do come down. That's another thing. We do have conferences. We have one in Texas every year and in Virginia. I'm usually the master of ceremonies.
Okay.
We have one coming up in August. Anybody in the area in Virginia, Dulles?
Oh, Virginia?
Yeah. But I do come down to, Lake Jackson every year in Houston we fly into. So, are you near? You're in Waco, right?
I'm about 5 hours from Lake Jackson.
That's far. Earth,
right. But that's across town in Texas, right? Like, it's like, I think you could fit about 9 New Jerseys in the state. So, it's very common for people here when you say, how long's your drive to work?
Yeah.
And they go like an hour and you go traffic and they're like, Not really.
Yeah.
That's just how far it is.
Right? I love Texas. When I come down there, I love it.
But hey, let me know when you're going to be here, you know.
Yeah, if I ever am.
And I know you're not coming this year, but you're always welcome at my workshops.
Thank you. Maybe one year I will come. Thank you. I do have, too much travel already.
Yeah, I got you.
So,
well, Chris, thanks for being with us today. I'll make sure links to all you guys' stuff.
Thank you.
Are in the audio notes. And guys, if you want the audio notes, if you're watching the video now or later, there's a link down there. If you're watching it live and you click it right now, I always have to say this because there's always somebody, it doesn't work. It can't work yet. We're not done. It'll be about 30 minutes after the live ends, and it says right there, you click that link and you can get all of the resources. Chris, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Jack.
All right, guys, real quick, I just want to wrap up. Really appreciate Chris being on with us. I don't have an item of the day for you guys today, but I do appreciate when you do your online shopping at tspaz.com. That really helps us out. I also really appreciate it when you guys become members of the Member Support Brigade. If you do that, you will get discounts to over 70 partners who give you enough discounts on the things you're already buying that it will pay for itself. I hear from people all the time say I make $300-$400 a year in discounts through MSB discounts because it's a $50 product. You know, and you get several hundred dollars worth of discounts, it's profit. So do consider joining if you would. I tell you, that's like the number one way we pay the bills around here is that membership program. And if you haven't picked up a copy of my book yet, Laws of Life, please do so. And remember, it is a great book to put in the hands of a young person. Let's say somebody 15 to 25 that's looking for some direction in their life. They are the core principles that I built everything that I have on. They're the core principles that made me that guy when I was in my 30s. I was running a company with 2,500 contractors, with 50 employees. That's how I got there. Not through school, not through connections, not through a family, just basic principles of life. So that's what Laws of Life is all about. And Laws of Life 2 is coming. And we've got some other cool stuff coming soon, so stay tuned. Tomorrow we'll be back at you. And I'm sure you'll hear from Chris or one of his teammates because there'll be an expert counsel Q&A show for me. Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way.